as we start thinking about a child's world and about potentially being scared, last time we talked about that word that we generally don't talk about in church, unless you're reading the Song of Solomon, and that is sex. We discovered some things about our world at that particular point, even around us here. The next chapter in the book deals with economic issues, economic questions, economic woes that are faced not just by us, we who are adults, but faced by children as well. So the first question that is on the sheet: what did you eat for supper or dinner, whichever you call it, last night? Anybody here remember what you ate? I know what I ate. Oh, Charlie's. Pizza, chili fries. Cheese crackers. Oh, peanut butter crackers. Tuna fish sandwich. Okay, well, at least you remembered, right? Mary directed a wedding yesterday and a reception last night, and Shane Clary of Good Country Life for Good Life Catering. So I homemade biscuits with pulled pork barbecue in them, sweet potato fries, and beef tenderloin in rolls. Stuffed mushroom caps stuffed with cheddar cheese and sausage. Well, I won't tell you about the Low Country grits then. But well, if you couldn't remember what you had for dinner last night, or supper, a lot of you did, maybe you can remember what you had for breakfast this morning, how much or how little that might have been, or what you ate for lunch earlier today. Anybody in here that doesn't remember having food? That doesn't remember? Anybody in here that really had difficulty in finding something to eat in your home or going out to eat? We generally don't. The pantries are fairly well stocked for many of us. And yet, around us, there are all kinds of folks who are in dire, dire straits. I bet there's some folks in here, and I know if certain ones were here, they'd be raising their hands, but have you ever known what it was like not to have food when you needed it? Melissa? What'd you feel like? If you don't mind. If you don't have to share.
No, I was just scared. Just disheartened.
Okay. Scared, disheartened.
And I guess more embarrassed because I guess I could have went for help or something, but I was just more embarrassed about
it. Right, right. Well, you know, that's that pride.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we, our good friends, the Littons, Pam at one point in time, after her husband was pretty big into drugs, and also after her divorce, she ended up, they didn't have a pet at the time, but she bought plenty of dog food cans and would cook things like that just to get by. She had a young child, actually two young children, and that kind of thing. So, you know, I've never known what it was like. My grandparents used to talk about it, son. You know, coming through the Depression, those kinds of things. But, and I know other folks who have had that feeling. And quite frankly, even with Perk around, here in Piedmont, there are folks that won't go there just because of the feelings. They're afraid people are going to look down on them. Now, in today's economic setting, it's tough. Prices of everything going up, yeah, it's tough on we who have, but think about those who don't have jobs, who have limited resources, those kinds of things. What about... It was suggested that to play a film clip. I decided not. Instead of that, I just kind of read it. Maybe you remember, I guess everybody in here has probably seen at least one of the versions of Dickens' Christmas Carol, movie or play or Perhaps you actually got to hold a book and read it, even though that probably wasn't fun at the time, depending on how old you were. But the book was published in 1843. Sometimes we think like this. Reading from a point in the book with Scrooge. This lunatic, in letting Scrooge's nephew out, had let two other people in. They were portly gentlemen, pleasant to behold, and now stood with their hats off in Scrooge's office. They had books and papers in their hands and bowed to him. "Scrooge and Marley's, I believe," said one of the gentlemen, referring to his list. "Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?" "Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years," Scrooge replied. "He died 7 years ago this very night." "We have no doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner," said the gentleman presenting his credentials. It certainly was, for they had been two kindred spirits. At the ominous word liberality, Scrooge frowned and shook his head and handed the credentials back. "At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge," said the gentleman, taking up a pen, "it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute, who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts, sir." "Are there no prisons?" asked Scrooge. "Plenty of prisons," said the gentleman, laying down the pen again. "And the union workhouses," demanded Scrooge, "are they still in operation?" "They are still," returned the gentleman. "I wish I could say they were not." "The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor then," said Scrooge. "Both very busy, sir." "Oh, I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course," said Scrooge. "I'm very glad to hear it." "Under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude," returned the gentleman. "A few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for?" And Scrooge said, "What?" "Nothing." "Yeah. You wish to be anonymous?" "I wish to be left alone," said Scrooge. "Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there. Many can't go there, and many would rather die." "If they would rather die," said Scrooge, "they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. Besides, excuse me, I don't know that." "But you might know it," observed the gentleman. "It's not my business," Scrooge returned. "It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen." Know anybody in our world today, maybe even in Piedmont, who has that kind of an attitude toward folks who are needy, folks that are poor, folks that need assistance? What are some of the attitudes you hear from people about those that are poor or in need? Anything like Scrooge? None of you hear those kinds of things. I must be going to the wrong places here, because I do hear them sometimes. I don't hear them at the Ministerial Association. I don't hear them in this church. I don't hear them on Fifth Sunday nights, but I do hear them at other places, even places nearby. The nation's poverty rate increased in 2010 to 15.1%, the highest level since 1993. In 2009, 14.3% of people in America were living in poverty. You'll notice in 2009, the government defined the poverty line as an income of $22,314 a year for a family of four. 11,139 for an individual.
Yes. With the price of everything is, and that's a whole lot. You know, you don't have to get that way to be.
Oh, I know.
The poverty level.
I know. The way inflation is and everything else, yeah.
Can't live off.
That's true.
That by yourself.
That's true. And you've got, you know, we've got the price of everything's going up because price of oil's gone up, because price of gas has gone up, in spite of the fact that Exxon had record profits last quarter, and I mean, they're not the only ones. And we actually send refined gasoline to other countries instead of keeping it all here. Adjusted for inflation, the middle income family only earned 11% more in 2010 than they did in 1980. Over 30 years later, and only 11% more. While the richest 5% in America saw their income surge by 42%. Poverty rate for children under age 18 increased to 22% in 2010. More than 1 in 5 children in the United States is living in poverty. 1 in 5 children are hungry each day due to a lack of food. The poverty rate in South Carolina in 2010 was 17%. In 2008, by the way, 55% of what are called food insecure households participated in either SNAP food stamps, WIC, or the National School Lunch Program. That's a large number of people. The food stamp program helps roughly 40 million low-income Americans a year. These stats are 2000. This is 2010. 75% of all food stamp participants are in families with children. A third of participants are elderly people or people with disabilities. In 2010, children and seniors accounted for 52% of SNAP participants in South Carolina. In fiscal year 2012, the average SNAP household has a gross monthly income of $731 nationally, $650 in South Carolina is the average monthly income. Allendale County, you can see on the stats here, Allendale County, and we help Allendale with our Allendale project, sending food and other things. Allendale County is the highest rate of children living in poverty in the state. 48.3% in 2011 of children in Allendale County lived below the poverty line, or lived in families below the poverty line. 21, and you might think, okay, Greenville County, we're pretty well off, got a lot. 21% of children in Greenville County, 21.4%, live below the poverty line. And 23.9% in Anderson County. Children are particularly susceptible to toxins. Poor children are twice as likely as non-poor to have unhealthy levels of lead in their blood. Babies born to mothers who have not completed high school are almost twice as likely to die before their first birthday. This is nationwide. In the United States, and this statistic is 2010, so I don't know if it's gone up or down. The latest stats I could get from the government websites. 27 children die from the effects of poverty in the United States every day. Not, doesn't mean 27 are starving to death every day, but that means 27 children living below the poverty line per day in the United States die. Right, right. 29 out of the top 30. Some of that goes to homelessness. It increases with homelessness. In the book, it talks some about homelessness, but in 2008, which are the latest stats, once again, that I could get off the internet or by making a couple of phone calls, over 50% of the homeless population in the state of South Carolina was found in 5 counties. Over 50% of the people homeless in South Carolina are found in five counties. Or were. Charleston, Georgetown, Horry, Richland, Greenville. Between those five counties, over 50% of the children in the state that were homeless are in those five counties. And you look around.
Right. Earlier morning, he said he stays in, you know, all over the place. I guess they're out moving from where they've been sleeping or, you know, going from one place to another. But he said that one of McDonald's or somewhere he goes by and gets a biscuit. I don't know if they feed them there or what, but he says there's always a bunch of them there. But he said he feeds them every day.
And we're not just talking, there are a lot of homeless adults, but we're also talking about families that are out there with children, and children just living on the streets, adolescents. Here in Greenville County, which kind of makes us think, when we look around us. Well, I guess that's kind of the chicken or the egg question. You know, we do have more facilities than a lot of those places. So does that increase the number of homeless that then use those facilities, or we build the facilities because we need to do it? It's like when I was at Anderson College back in the 90s teaching there and campus ministries, and we had the program Ba Is Not Humbug, Blanketing Anderson's Homeless. And campus ministries, we collected blankets, and the police chief said, oh, there are no homeless that live under the viaducts. There are no more than about two dozen homeless people in the whole county. And the first year, out of the 82 or 92 blankets we collected, all of them were gone, and there were people wanting more. But one of the police officers, who was a relative of one of my students, said, have you got about 25 of them that we can have? And they were all distributed to people living under the viaducts in Anderson. The next year we collected around 140, 150 blankets, and they were gone in a week. New blankets. Money to buy new blankets. And there were a lot of those that were children. I think we do have that opportunity. What's really interesting is that South Carolina in, let's see, what is that year? So I got another stat here about 2008. In South Carolina, there was 73% increase in unemployment, 68% increase in, no, this is 2009, in home foreclosures, but that did not increase the homelessness. According to one of the folks that studied in the state, said one of the big factors, despite the challenges, is that people are experiencing more housing affordability in South Carolina than in other parts of the country. I know we've had folks move in near us recently, and they said, you know, from north of the Mason-Dixon line, and their money will go a whole lot further in South Carolina than it will in the Northeast. In some places in the Midwest. But I know back then, and even today, but back then we had we were allowed to go to the Salvation Army to distribute blankets, but we could not actually go in to the place. We had to leave them there and check them off, and then they would pass them out both at the men's shelter and the women and children's shelter. And they said they were full every night. I will tell you, at Memorial Hospital, especially in the winter when the weather's really bad and cold, at Greenville Memorial, because Memorial can't turn anybody away, they're a public hospital, you know that the ER is going to be absolutely slammed with people who don't want to go to the shelters for whatever reason. And they know they can come to the hospital and come in. It'll take them hours to be seen. They're warm. They're dry. They might even be able to get a soft drink and a sandwich. And increasingly in the last 2 years, when I would work a PRN on a Friday night or something over there, increasingly when that happens, there are more and more children along with the folks, that the adults that come in. I see your waiting rooms. Other waiting rooms. Well, and that is, you know, a difficulty. And it's been shown by studies that children in poverty, as we say at the top of the second page, children in poverty are at a greater risk of abuse and neglect, of truancy, delinquency, teen pregnancy. And it's not because they're necessarily bad kids, but it's the situation in which they find themselves. It's bad enough, we think it's bad enough when adults are without jobs and don't have food and all this kind of stuff, but when the children are affected and the children live in the cars. I'm trying to remember a story on one of the news programs recently about a teenage girl who lives, she's homeless, she lives in a car sometimes, and sometimes lives in abandoned places, and yet she's making the A honor roll because she's figured out that's her only way out.
Okay.
Right. I didn't see the State of the Union, but it might have been the same person that I saw on a news program. But that's the exception, because of the advantages and disadvantages. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 17. Whoever is kind to the poor lends to the Lord and will be repaid in full. So it's a question, who cares for them? Whoever is kind to the poor lends to the Lord and will be repaid in full. Of course, I don't even have to read Matthew 25:34-40. All I got to tell you is it has to do with sheep and goats and final judgment, and you know what that says. For I was hungry and you gave me food, thirsty, you gave me drink, naked, you clothed me. Acts chapter 6. There's a problem going on in the church, about to split it wide open. I'll probably tell a story that I've told before, and just bear with me if I do. Now, during those days when the disciples were increasing in number, the Hellenists complained against the Hebrews because their widows were being neglected in the daily distribution of food. And widows and orphans, both. Widows and orphans, as we said the other week, represent the most vulnerable, the ones least able to help themselves. And we do it in a variety of ways. Sometimes it's with food. Sometimes it's with other things. Church in Western North Carolina, back in the late 90s. Yeah, late 90s. That had, I know I've told this, but I can't remember if it was recently, so. But that had a full, in the basement of the church, had a youth room, and they had a full kitchen and a full laundry room, and they had showers and locker rooms and that kind of thing. There was an alternative school right across the parking lot from them for unwed teenage mothers-to-be. And it was fairly highly populated in this small town just west of Asheville. And the administrators and the principal came from the school next door to the church and asked the pastor of the church, said, we don't have any way to teach these girls how to wash clothes and cook food and take care of a baby when a baby comes along. And many of them's parents have said, you can't come back here. Is it okay if for a couple of hours, 2 to 3 hours, a couple or three afternoons a week, if we bring them across, we'll supervise them and take them in and teach them how to cook their own food, how to wash clothes, dry clothes, take care of a baby when it's born. And of course, the pastor of the church said, "Well, you know, I would say yes, but it's got to go to the church." And so she agreed to take it to them. 2 weeks later, it was brought to the church, and they were going to vote the following week. And the church voted 50-something to 30-something yes. And the 30-somethings left. The meeting got very, very, very vitriolic, and they left and started their own little group. Because they said, we don't want those kinds of people in here. They might have a bad influence. They weren't splitting over interpretations of the Bible. They were splitting over ministry. Taking care of the poor, the needy, the hungry. And of course, what is James' definition of true religion? James 1:27. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this. That's right. That's right. That you visit widows and orphans in their affliction. You take care of the widows and the orphans while remaining unstained from the world. Poverty, economic issues have been. Poverty and economic issues will continue to be, it seems like, in the immediate future, an issue. With not just our economy, but the world economy the way that it is, with people shipping jobs to other places or finding... I was visiting Maxie this afternoon, and Todd was there, and we were talking, and something came up along these lines and about robotics and all this kind of stuff. I said, yeah, just another way to put more people out of work except the ones creating the robots, you know, that kind of thing.
Often too, those jobs that go overseas to the other country, the people that make enough there,
right?
Could not be in the market.
Oh, if we looked at, I had stats and I just left them in my office about all the deaths in the world. I forget how many children right now it is, but it's in the tens plus of children that die every second somewhere in the world because of poverty-related issues. Yes, Susan?
Well, culturally, we've changed so much since the scripture.
Yes, well, we have.
So I just want to know your thoughts on, do you think now, because it says widows and orphans, now we don't see that many widows and children because, you know, we do see some. Do you think it now
right.
includes divorcees?
I
mom has never been married.
In 2012, that's a very good question. And I would also invite others to pitch in here. Widows and orphans, and widows didn't always have the children, have children with them at that time. Some of them were older, some of them were younger and had children. Orphans, you know, parents would be killed, fathers would be killed, and children were left out on their own. So they represented the most vulnerable. And I would think today it could be widows with and without children, children that are orphaned, whether it's because parents are no longer in this world or because of neglect, and so they get shifted around to fosters, and some of them leave those, and some of them just take off. I would say yes, folks who are divorced and having difficult times, especially folks who are divorced and have children and are having difficult times. You know, the church should be a place, and I'm not saying that we have the economic resources to take care of all of these things, but I think the church can be one link in the chain and offer a different voice of hope than what other folks do. I sometimes get very, very cynical about, and I generally don't carry much, if any, cash around. But I sometimes get very, very cynical about the folks standing on the side of the road every day with the same sign. And after about 3 weeks, they're wearing brand new boots and brand new jeans, but still standing there with the same sign.
And
right. Well, or, but there are times that, and I don't generally give money. When I do have it and do something, somebody's got a sign, they say they're hungry, I'll if I decide to do something at that point, if I feel led to do it, I'll swing through the nearest drive-through fast food, buy a meal, and go by. And most of the time they take it, although I've had a couple of times when I've done that in the last few years where somebody says, oh, I don't want that. I want the money. Sorry, I'd ride up the road and give it to somebody else. But I think it's the church can give a different perspective of hope. And Jesus didn't say when he was telling the story about who to invite to the banquet. He said, don't go out and invite the ones that you know will owe you and they'll pay it back. You know, and I'm going to invite these people because I know they're going to invite me back to their homes. But he said, go out and find the poor, the hungry, the slaves, the servants, the others, and bring them in bring them to the banquet and feed them, because then you will be doing something that's a true service, because they can't repay you. But he also said, don't do it in order to think you're going to get stars in your crown and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's the motivation for doing it, doing what's right and proper, because it's the proper thing to do. I do think that, you know, you got folks who are divorced and having major issues. Folks that might be divorced and have children that, and you know, they may be doing what they can to try and get it done. But I do sometimes, and there are times that I must admit I have ridden by somebody who I've seen stand on the same street corner or the same exit for 2 or 3 weeks and that kind of thing, and I wonder, and a lot of times I drive on by. Well, there are some that do. I know a friend of mine who talked about one that stood at a particular exit, and this is 3 or 4 years ago, and he said one day late in the evening, just as it was getting dark, he happened to be riding by as the guy was walking across to a parking lot at a truck stop and got into a van that wasn't, but got in the driver's side of a van that wasn't but about 2 years old and drove off. So there are those. I remember stopping or at a Dunkin' Donuts in town, and there was a guy just sitting there in front of the sign one morning. I stopped and I went inside and I said, y'all got coffee? Give me coffee, a couple of donuts. I said, you got any gift cards? Sure. So I got a gift card and I said, I'm going to take it out and give it to that guy. And they said, well, you can't. And I did. I said, you can if you want to. I said, but you'd be surprised how much money he's got and how many gift cards he gets. He just chooses to live that way and walk the streets all the time. And, you know, but we're not told to do it because we're going to get something back. So I do think in 2012 it does go that far. Another thing, though, and people say, well, we don't have enough. Sometimes we barely have enough to make our own bills, you know, and our own budgets. And I know that it is tougher now because of economic times and people are having to cut back on things. But the study, which I brought up before, that came out, was it last year or year before last? Study that had been done over 5 years, and the average person in Southern Baptist churches gave 2.5% to 3.5% annually to the year, not anywhere near 10%. And it's been stated that by many, and I agree, that in the country, if everyone who claimed to be part of a Christian church or a synagogue gave the 10% that was mentioned in the Bible and anticipated, government programs to help the poor and the needy wouldn't even be necessary, because churches would have more money than they could spend on their own budgets if they did that. So I do think that we have to look at those kinds of things. At the same time, I don't think that the church is currently, with what is being given across the country, much less across the world, can economically fix all the problems. And therein lies a dilemma, because we're called to help the poor, and we're called to help the needy. And unless somebody's giving me a gift card, I don't go to Starbucks. I can buy a whole pound of coffee for what one cup costs. But I admit, I've got more food than I need. I've got more coffee than I need. That kind of thing. So I really don't know. I mean, how do we address the poverty? I think one of the ways we have to do it, though, is with a word of kindness or acts of kindness and hope. To try and help folks figure that there is some hope, and instead of getting locked into a system, to try and get beyond it. How do we do that? I think it's got to be a partnership between all aspects of society. We can't just dump it in the government's lap. But that's what a lot of folks want to do. I know the Bible says we're supposed to take care of these folks, and sometimes I get frustrated because there's so much need. How do we address it all? That's what I was thinking. Yeah. And this church does a lot. You all do a lot. I know that. And there are folks in this church and in this community who do more than a lot of folks know. And then there's some of them who are doing, and you do know, but they're not doing it so that you do. Y'all understood that, right? But you all do a lot in giving to missions, home missions, foreign missions, state missions, the food pantry. The food that we collect, and we used to give it out here, but that got kind of dangerous if where the food pantry is, and Vicky's here by herself, and it can get dangerous. But then it's the PERC. And PERC will not turn away people if there's a true need. And still does try to connect them with other agencies as well. The Ministerial Association, what is given there. Now, what we collect for World Hunger, we split between PERC and the Ministerial Association. You all give generously. And what we collect for World Hunger goes for food, specifically for food. I used to do that with Super Bowl, but the deacons, we talked this year, and the deacons determined that Super Bowl money split in half between the two. But it doesn't have to just go for food. It can go to help with electric bills and other kinds of things as well. Not long ago, the Ministerial Association even helped, in a minor way, with some funerary expenses for someone. There was a person that passed away, and nobody in the family even had enough money not only to bury him, didn't have enough money to have him cremated, and finally, after a while, didn't even have the money to pay for the body being stored. And there were different individuals and other groups that came together and kind of helped there. The Allendale Project. Beverly Greer has said on more than one occasion, the food and the clothing and the toiletries and the other things that we send to Allendale, whenever she comes by here, she fills up if she's got her car, it's the back seat, the floorboard, and the whole trunk just with what we put in. But she has said this church gives more to Allendale than any other single church in CBF Life in South Carolina. So I know you all are very generous, and you have a heart that really cares, and really reaches out not just to children but to adults as well. Sometimes we don't know, and I've had people say, "Well, you know, I would do more, but I just don't know. I don't know what to do." And if you don't know, you can't do, which is another thing. People get embarrassed to ask for help. Some of the ways we can help, I guess, is if you know of a need, as best we can, we may not be able to solve the whole thing, but you all around here are very generous about doing that. But what it says about our world is, I'm afraid, one of the fears that can scare me about Sydney's world, growing up, as well as the children around in our neighborhood, and the children come on Wednesday nights, and that kind of thing, is when homelessness, poverty, and hunger issues begin to affect them and their families so desperately, in some parts of the country, the mentality is, well, if I can't get it any other way, then I'm going to take it any way I can. I have not read the books. I haven't seen the movie. Don't know that I will. Both my son and daughter-in-law, that is David and Kristen, read the books. They went and saw the movie, Hunger Games, and said it was all right, but the books were a whole lot better. But I think the premise behind that is apocalyptic views of the future, where people actually they get chosen to fight in these games so that they can actually have sustenance and other kinds of things. A lot of the food that we send to other countries, you know, you see it on the news, gets waylaid by warlords and others instead of actually reaching people. But does that mean we stop sending? No. I think we have to find other ways to do it. But I really am, in many ways, I mean, you all do so much, and I really am at a point sometimes where I hate to even talk about it and bring it up and ask for more, because y'all do so much. But I think if more folks in other churches could see and connect with the same sense of hope and same vision of trying to help, then maybe Piedmont could be better, and then beyond Piedmont, another area. But I really am at a loss to know exactly what to do about some of this and how we keep our children from being scared. Anybody in here ever had a child or a grandchild ask you if they were going to have something to eat? Anybody? Or I do know that there are some children in our area who have had relatives to say they're not sure what they're going to eat at home. And you all have helped them in some of that too. And for that, I know they're grateful, but I'm grateful for what you do. That's showing, not just saying. Sometimes the action, what you do, speaks a whole lot louder than the words you say and the words you speak. And yeah. And here I stand, and we're about to quit. Here I stand, worried about, and I know I said it earlier, and it's just my competitive nature, and deep down inside of me, and my blood runs blue. But here I am worried about who's going to win a basketball game tonight and make it to New Orleans. And there's a house I'm going to pass probably sometime on my way home tonight where somebody's not going to have enough food. Well, I know that there is enough food produced in the world to feed adequately most every person in the world. But we don't get it places. I mean, trust me, our Steve and Pam, and they eat out a lot, but it's just the two of them. But one time not too long ago, Pam came and visited, and our refrigerator wasn't absolutely stuffed to the gills. And she said, "Oh no, the world may be coming to an end. Mary's refrigerator's half empty." But we do. And I started taking to eating more leftovers instead of tossing it out. Just, I guess, because in the back of my mind, and it's true. I still remember my mama and my grandmama saying when I didn't want to eat something, there are starving children somewhere. But you're right, Jane. There's enough, although with some of the changing patterns, weather patterns in the world, food production is lessening worldwide as far as grains and other things, vegetables, because of the changing weather patterns. Whatever that's attributable to, whether it's global warming, whether it's deforestation of the Amazon rainforest or other things. I'm amazed in housing developments. They go into housing development, cut down all the trees, strip the topsoil and sell it, and then come back, build a house, and then come back and plant these little bitty spindly things. Yeah, poor soil. Yes, Jane hugs trees. We've run over, surprise. But well, you know, and somebody that made made $25 million for a movie, and they get on, and I appreciate the fact that they're on speaking about world hunger, but they say, I'm going to make my own donation. I'm going to give $100,000. Recently, I saw one said, I'm going to give $150,000 toward this cause, and somebody that for their last movie made like $12 million.
Yeah. Well, sure they do.
But yeah,
but.
And so, you know, I think part of it's changing attitudes. If we can change attitudes one person at a time. On both sides of the fence, those who are in need and those who have the means to give, then we make the difference. Thank you all. Next week, the final chapter in the book deals with other concerns, healthcare issues and other kinds of concerns that might scare us for our world and how we address those kinds of things in order to make the world not just a better place and a less scary place for our own children, but a less scary place for children, period. Thank you. God bless you. Go in peace. Amen.